My name is Alan Pavlin. I'm a passionate cinephile, and I want to talk about the French director Robert Bresson. Bresson's 13 features over 40 years, ranging from 1943 to 83, constitute arguably the most original and brilliant body of work over a long career from a film director in the history of cinema. He's the most idiosyncratic and uncompromising of all major filmmakers, in the sense that he always tried to create precisely what he wanted without surrendering to considerations of commerce, audience popularity, or people's preconceptions of what cinema should be. And although it might be argued that his venture into colour from Une femme douce, not from 1969 onwards, was probably against his better judgment, he shows mastery in its use. Born in central France and educated in Paris, Bresson's early ambition was to be a painter. He ventured into filmmaking with the short film Les Affaires Publiques in 1934, a satire which was rediscovered in the 1980s after being thought lost. After a year or so as a prisoner of war, he was approached by a Paris priest with a proposal for a film about the Bethany Order of Nuns, which became Les Anges du Péché, 1943, or literally Angels of Sin in English. His next feature was also made during the occupation, and filmmaking had by then definitely supplanted painting. There's a confusion over his date of birth. Some sources give 1901 and others 1907, but I'm pretty sure it's 1901, and as he died in 1999, he spanned the whole 20th century. Three formative influences in Bresson's life undoubtedly mark his films. His Catholicism, which took the form of the predestinarian French strain known as Jansenism, his early years as a painter, and his experiences as a prisoner of war. These influences manifest themselves, respectively, in the recurrent themes of free will versus determinism, in the extreme and austere precision with which he composes a shot, and in the frequent use of the prison motif. Two of his films are located almost entirely inside prisons. Three of his works take place in a holy Catholic context. Les Anges du Péché, his 1943 film, a metaphysical thriller set in a convent. Diary of a Country Priest from 1950, a rare example of a great novel by Georges Bernano being turned into an even greater film, and The Trial of Joan of Arc from 1962, inevitably overshadowed by Carl Theodor Dreyer's 1928 classic The Passion of Joan of Arc. The Jansenism, which is a sort of Catholic version of Calvinism, manifests itself in the way leading characters are acted upon and simply surrender themselves to their fate. In O Azar Balthazar, for example, from 1966, which is about a donkey, Balthazar, both the donkey and his on-off owner, Marie, passively accept the ill treatment they both experience, as opposed to the evil Gerard, who initiates most of what causes others to suffer. Bresson seemed to become increasingly pessimistic about human nature. His penultimate two films suggest that he had more concern for animals and the environment than for people, while the characters in his astonishing final film, L'Argent, made in his 80s, simply the victims of a chain of circumstance. Money is the root of all evil. One effect of the Jansenist influence is Bresson's total mistrust of psychological motives for a character's actions. The conventional narrative film, indeed the conventional story of any kind, insists that people have to have reasons for what they do. A motiveless murder in a detective story would be unacceptable. In Bresson, however, people act for no obvious reason. They behave out of character and in general simply follow the destiny which has been mapped out for them. Often a character will state an intention and in the very next scene will do the opposite. Characters who appear to be out and out rogues will unaccountably do something good. An example being the sacked camera shop assistant in L'Argent, who gives his ill-gotten gains to charity. At the same time, it should be stressed that Bresson did not predetermine how his films would finally emerge. It was a process. It was a process of discovery for him to see what would be revealed by his non-professional actors, or models as he called them, after he trained them for their part. Bresson's second influence, his early experience as a painter, is manifested in the austerity of his compositions. A painter has to decide what to put in, a filmmaker what to leave out. With Bresson, nothing unnecessary is shown. Indeed, he goes further and often leaves the viewer to infer what is happening outside the frame. Thus, we often see shots of hands, feet, door handles, and other parts of objects where any other filmmaker would show the whole. A Bresson film requires unbroken concentration on the viewer's part, and I've occasionally felt literally breathless after watching one because of the concentration required. So rich in detail and events is Oazar Balthazar, for example, the donkey film, that it is easy on a first viewing simply to overlook subplots such as the death of a child near the beginning and the long-running legal wrangle over land. It is for this reason that many of Bresson's films are exceptionally fast-moving in their narrative. One exception is the almost contemplative Four Nights of a Dreamer from 1971, where little actually happens. Interestingly, the central character is a painter. If L'Argent were remade as a Hollywood thriller, it would have at least double the running time and would dwell at length on the brutal violence in the last section, which is merely elliptically hinted at by Bresson. The running time of his films averages under 90 minutes, yet the viewer can be surprised at the amount that happens in that time. A Man Escaped, made in 1956, and The Trial of Joan of Arc are the two prison films, and Bresson often uses prison as a metaphor for spiritual imprisonment, or indeed release. A classic case of the latter is Pickpocket, where Michel finds redemption from his criminal career only by intentionally being caught, and in the famous final scene, by telling Jeanne from his prison cell, "What a strange road I had to take to find you." A key ingredient of Bresson's methods is his view of actors, his models. From Diary of a Country Priest on, he used solely non-professionals and was even reported to be upset when two of his actors, Anne Wierzemski from Balthazar and Dominique Sander from Une Femme Douce, went on to professional acting careers. Only one actor ever appeared in two of his films. Jean-Claude Gilbert appeared in both Balthazar and Mouchette from 1967. Actors were chosen not for their ability, but for their appearance, often for an intense facial asceticism, like the priest in Diary of a Country Priest, or the pickpocket in the film of that name. He trained them to remove all traces of theatricality and to speak with a fast, monotonic delivery. Indeed, he rejected the word cinema, which he regarded as merely filmed theatre, and instead used the word cinematography, not to be confused with the art of camera work. All movements of actors are strictly controlled by the director. When they walk, they have to take a precise number of steps, and eye movements become extremely important. The lowering of the eyes towards the ground is almost a Bresson trademark. The result of this approach is that the viewer becomes involved not with the character's appearance, but almost with the core of his being, his soul. Bresson's first two features use professionals, even stars, and though they are both excellent films which anticipate the director's later themes, they would probably have been even more satisfying if models had been used. Along with Bresson's painterly eye for what should and should not be shown, he makes exquisite use of sound. Off-screen sound is of key importance. The raking of leaves during the intense confrontation between the priest and the countess in Diary of a Country Priest. The scraping of the guard's keys along the metal railings and the far-off sound of trains in A Man Escaped. The whinnying of horses in Lancelot du Lac all serve to heighten the sense that a time of crisis has arrived for the central characters. Music is used increasingly sparingly as his career progresses. A specially composed score is used in the early films, but in A Man Escaped, there are occasional snatches of Mozart, in Pickpocket, Lully, in Balthazar, Schubert, and in later Bresson, non-diegetic music is dispensed with altogether. Plot summary of most of Bresson's films would render them extremely off-putting for a lover of feel-good movies. In most, the central character either dies, sometimes by suicide, or ends up in prison. Indeed, the film with the only unashamedly happy ending, A Man Escaped, was his biggest commercial success. There was a happy ending of sorts to Les Dames du Bois de Boulogne, one of his early films, 1945, but the general tone of the plot would be regarded by many as decidedly gloomy. Many of Bresson's films are not, however, meant to be in the realist mode. For example, Balthazar is basically a fable, while Lancelot du Lac is a highly stylized portrayal of a medieval legend. All Bresson's feature films after the first have literary antecedents of one form or another, albeit updated. Two are from Dostoevsky, Une Femme Douce and Four Nights of a Dreamer. Two from Georges Bernano, Diary of a Country Priest and Mouchette. One is from Tolstoy, L'Argent. One from Diderot, Les Dames du Bois de Boulogne. While A Man Escaped and The Trial of Joan of Arc are based on the written accounts of the true events. In addition, Pickpocket is clearly influenced by Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, and Balthazar has a similar premise to the same author's The Idiot. Lancelot du Lac is derived from Malory's Arthurian legends, while Le Double Probablement, 1977, was inspired by a newspaper report, as is stated at the start of the film. A long-standing unrealised project was a film of the Book of Genesis, but Bresson reportedly said that, unlike the human models, he was unable to train the animals to do as they were told. There's no strong critical consensus on which of Bresson's films is the greatest, though the magazine Sight and Sound's most recent critics poll, published in 2012, put O.S.R. Balthazar at number 16 in the world's greatest films, and two others, Pickpocket and A Man Escaped, were both in the top 100. The great French critic André Bazin, who didn't live to see most of Bresson's films, championed Diary of a Country Priest in an essay hailed by his English translator as the most perfectly wrought piece of film criticism he had ever read. Like the novel, this film is essentially a flashback where we see not a series of events, but reflections on those events, whether by the elderly priest who has sent the diary or by the young priest himself, being for the viewer to decide. A Man Escaped and Pickpocket are somewhat similar in that they both rely on voiceover, while for Pickpocket, an account is being written by Michelle the pickpocket. Again, we're seeing either the actual events or Michelle's later reflections on them. Some critics regard A Man Escaped as the peak of Bresson's art, with its alternate title, The Wind Bloweth Where It Will. The director expresses the view that God helps those who help themselves. The film makes clear that it is through the workings of fate, of extraordinary strokes of luck allied to his own efforts, that the hero is able to effect his escape. This is, as I mentioned earlier, a true story of a man who escaped from a Nazi prison camp. My own preference of his films, marginally, is for the two great mid-period rural dramas, O.S.R. Balthazar and Mouchette. For a very different view of Bresson, I once heard a well-known academic in the field of French cinema state that his films are more interesting to read about than to see. With his unique and wholly idiosyncratic methods and style, and general contempt for cinema as defined by himself, Robert Bresson was little influenced by other filmmakers. The critic and director Paul Schrader links him, not wholly convincingly, with Dreyer and Ozu, while Schrader's own films owe a thematic debt to him. The final shot of American Gigolo, for example, is a direct quote from the final shot of Pickpocket. Films like Alain Cavalier's Thérèse, Maurice Pialy's Under Satan's Son, and the Dardenne brothers' Rosetta have been liberally described as Bressonian. A critic once wrote that the film Sancho the Bailiff by the Japanese director Mizoguchi is one of those films for whose sake the cinema exists. For myself and many others, the same can be said of the work of Robert Bresson. My name is Alan Pavlin. One of my passions is cinema. Cinema came of age in the last century, but by the 1990s, people like the writer Susan Sontag and the director Jean-Luc Godard were talking of the end of cinema. They were proved completely wrong because the 21st century has produced a string of masterpieces from all around the world. I've made my personal top 10 list from the last 20 years, and anyone with a serious interest in world cinema should make a point of seeing at least these films. Number 10, Wong Kar-wai's In the Mood for Love. It's a sort of brief encounter set in Hong Kong in the 1960s. Two married couples, unknown to each other, move into adjacent apartments on the same day. We never see the husband of one and the wife of another, so the other two get thrown together, and just like the couple in Brief Encounter, this film is surely the most lushly romantic ever made, with gorgeous photography by Christopher Doyle and songs to swoon by Nat King Cole. Number 9, Beyond the Hills, by the Romanian director Cristian Mungiu. It's set in an Orthodox convent of nuns presided over by a dictatorial priest. One young nun is visited by a friend she grew up with in an orphanage, but the friend proves to be mentally unstable and disrupts the entire community, leading to exorcisms and hospitalizations. This is a stunningly shot film, beautifully acted by the young female leads. Number 8, The Return, is the debut feature of the Russian director Andrei Zvyagintsev. Two brothers live with their mother. Their father left home 12 years earlier, and they barely remember him. One day, a man turns up, claiming to be their father. Their mother says he is. The older brother accepts it, but the younger is very sceptical. The man takes them on a trip to the coast for several days to teach them things like fishing and camping. This is a powerful drama leading to an unexpected conclusion. Number 7, There Will Be Blood, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who's become one of the top Hollywood directors now. The brilliant Daniel Day-Lewis is an oil prospector who becomes obsessed with power and wealth. And the film starts around 1897, I think, and finishes 30 years later. During that time, the Daniel Day-Lewis character comes into contact with a young preacher whose family owns oil-rich land. This leads to a sort of war between them. The Day-Lewis character becomes increasingly unhinged, leading to a final conflict with the young preacher. Johnny Greenwood's score adds to the atmosphere of this terrific film. Number 7, Polish film Ida, directed by Paweł Pawlikowski. Number 6, sorry. Set in the early 1960s, this beautifully shot black and white film concerns a young nun who discovers from her aunt that she's actually Jewish and her parents were killed during the war. The young nun and the aunt go off in search of what actually happened, causing Ida to doubt her vocation. Number 5, Once Upon a Time in Anatolia, which is a profound meditation on mortality by the Turkish director Nuri Bilge Ceylan. Concerns an arrested murderer who cannot remember where in the countryside he buried the body. And most of the film consists of a nighttime journey by police, doctors and others in the hope of finding the place to dig up the body. It's an intensely haunting an atmospheric film, certainly best seen on a big screen. Number four, I'm a strong Terrence Malick fan. I couldn't wait to see The Tree of Life when it came out in 2011, and it certainly didn't disappoint. Inspired by the Book of Job, from which there's a quotation right at the beginning of the film, and by Malick's own growing up in 1950s Texas, it tells of a middle-aged man reflecting on his childhood and his brother who died in his late teens, I think it's supposed to be. But the film contains what must be the furthest back flashback ever committed to film. It goes right back to a beginning of the universe in a rather controversial sequence. Number three, the first foreign language film ever to win the Best Picture Oscar was Parasite, directed by Bong Joon-ho. It's at the same time a laugh-out-loud comedy, a social commentary on present-day South Korea, and a horror movie with some outrageous plot twists that turned everything upside down. I saw this twice in the cinema before the coronavirus lockdown. Very, very clever film. Number two is Leviathan, another Russian film directed by Zviagintsev. Set in a coastal town, it's about a corrupt mayor who's determined to get hold of the land owned by a local motor mechanic for purposes we discover at the end of the film. Surprisingly, it got through the Russian censors, as there are some fairly explicit criticisms of Vladimir Putin. And at number one, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, a loving recreation of the director's growing up in 1970s Mexico City, the central character being the faithful live-in maid, Cleo. With stunning black and white photography, it takes in real events like student riots and an earthquake that happened at that time. The long take near the end, where Cleo wades into the sea to rescue the children, is even more amazing when you learn that the actress couldn't even swim. I was lucky enough to see Roma during its short theatrical release before it became confined to Netflix, one of the landmarks of cinema in my view. Well, that's my choices. There have been lots of other films which could equally have replaced some of those in my list, but certainly the 10 that I've listed ought to be seen.